Vodka O'Clock.
Hey everyone, it's Amber Love, and you're listening to the Vodka O'Clock podcast from AmberUnmasked.com. Don't forget, you can support the show and the website through patreon.com/AmberUnmasked, where you can pledge as little as $1 per creation, which basically comes down to $1 a week. And that really helps, and it also helps if you share those links with your own followers and network group. That's really helpful. So the show is labeled explicit, but I doubt that we'll get into anything regarding gratuitous, explicit natures, today. But returning to the show is comic book writer Wes Loker.
This is visit number 3. I'm getting my frequent flyer miles on.
You are. You might be in competition with Eric Grissom.
Oh, I'm going to take him down.
All right. So, yeah, you were also on episodes 1404 and 1427, for those of you that want to go back and listen to those, because Wes has a really diverse catalog of the comics that he writes. So, you might find something different that we talked about that appeals to you. Today, we are, because you've got printed comics and web comics, so we're going to cover some of the whole gamut here, but we really do want to talk about Unit 44, which had been successfully funded through Kickstarter quite a while ago.
Twice.
So
We did two. We got greedy, but we made it. We're here.
You did it. And yeah, so there have been some changes, and I want to find out what's going on with you. And it was Eduardo was your artist on this one, right?
Correct. Eduardo Jimenez, who's a fantastic artist from Costa Rica. He climbed on board a couple years ago, and we took the first issue to Kickstarter back in 2013, had a successful funding for just our first issue, which was great because it let us have kind of like a proof of concept of the book, and we were able to take it around to conventions. We pitched it to a couple publishers. And from there we decided, well, we're just going to do the whole series and we're going to self-publish this thing if we need to. So we went back to Kickstarter the following year, almost exactly a year later, raised the money to get issues 3 to 4 in the can. During that process, we linked up with Alterna Comics, and they offered to publish our series. They had some great things to say about it. We decided that they were the best fit for us, linked up with them. And the first issue is going to hit Comixology on Wednesday, March 25th.
Excellent. So how long is the series? Are you doing it issue by issue? Are you doing like a big trade all at once type?
It's going to be a monthly release. So we're going to start in March with the first issue, and then the fourth issue will come out in June. So we're going to be hitting every 30 days for 4 months. It's going to be awesome.
Okay. This is excellent. So for those of you that haven't gone back and heard the other podcasts about Unit 44, what you need to know is that it's a really super fun sci-fi comic, very much in the vein of like Men in Black meets like, what was it, like Pawn Stars or something?
We call it Storage Wars meets Men in Black.
Storage Wars, that was it. Yeah, because the concept to me was so freaking hilarious. So, so fill them in on what your pitch for Unit 44
is. Sure. Unit 44 is about inept Area 51 employees who forget to pay the rent on the facility's off-site storage unit, and then the secrets are sold to a couple of backwoods rednecks during a public auction, and much hilarity ensues from there.
Right. So when you were plotting this out of a storage unit filled with possible alien artifacts or investigation artifacts, did you take the time to make a whole huge list before you started writing, or was it something that came through organically?
It came through organically. I there's definitely a kind of a MacGuffin throughout the story. There is one particular item within the storage unit that becomes the central focus of the series, and the catch is that if there's a pending alien invasion of planet Earth, and of course the only way to stop it is with a crystal that was in this particular unit. So the main characters, Agent Gibson and Agent Hatch, who are two fumbling, bumbling men in blacks, if you will, they have to go on a mission to go retrieve it from the rednecks.
Okay. And in this universe that you have set up, because you do have it like very like realistic that this is taking place in America and relatively modern times, sure, and everything, do you have the alien knowledge being like widely accepted, or is it very much like today where nobody really believes anything?
Yeah, it's definitely this impending alien invasion is a complete secret. They can't let it get out into the public. Everybody would freak out and panic. So it's all a matter of kind of keeping everything under wraps while trying to solve their crisis.
So if this were to be, you know, like a homeland security issue, if that even exists by the time we're recording this, not so sure how our department is holding up there. Do you think that this is something that the government really takes care of, or is it like private agency type stuff that you expect to save the world?
I think that the government, they've got a plan for it. They're gonna plan, and they're gonna shut it down if it comes to that. So, in our story, we kind of approach it as Area 51 is the central point for covering up those type of things. And in the event that they don't stop the alien invasion, then it's very, very obvious that we are all going down real quick.
And let's talk about your agents, because they is a terrific buddy cop feel. You got your Joe Friday straight laced kind of guy. I think it might have been Kay. What was that, Kay, in the Men in Black?
Yeah, the Tommy Lee Jones character. It was a straight man.
Yeah, so, and then you've got your kind of carefree, doesn't want to conform with anything.
Correct. We've got an Agent Hatch who's our particular straight man in this comedy, and he's the elder statesman. He's the very by the book guy. He wants to do everything his way. And then he's balanced out by Agent Gibson, who's kind of just more of a slacker, more of a not taking everything so seriously. So it's an interesting way that they kind of play off each other, because you've got the guy that wants to do everything by the book, and then you've got the guy that kind of just wants to hang out and maybe do things a little bit of alternative method. So their interactions are definitely the focus of Unit 44, and that's pretty much where the bulk of the humor comes from.
So I know that you had mentioned that you're finally getting through Comixology to bring it to more people. So what were other changes that you did in order to be re-releasing the book now? Did you go through any artistic changes?
We did. We released the first issue in 2013 to our Kickstarter backers. We had a very limited release. We didn't really promote it. We knew we wanted to get the whole series in the bag before we took it to the world. We did, however, after we finished the series, we kind of took a step back, looked at the book from start to finish, and Ed decided, because he's crazy, he decided that he was going to redraw the entire first issue to not only kind of update the color palette to fit with the other issues that we had done, but he had drawn those characters for 88 pages. So he really had a handle on the world. He had a handle on the different quirks of each person. So he actually went back just within the last month and redrew and colored the entire first issue. So anybody that did back our original Kickstarter, if they come on board, they download the new issue on Comixology, they're basically going to get a whole new experience. While the story is the same, we did incorporate a lot of new visual humor. There's a few new gags in there. So I highly encourage that anybody who even got to check out the first one, they need to come back. They need to see what he did, because it is just phenomenal.
That sounds like such a huge undertaking.
It is. I don't envy him at all.
I know. I know other people who have done that. Steve Bryant did something very similar with Athena Voltaire, and it was like only he tackled like hundreds of pages or something.
Oh, yeah. And this is Ed's first comic book mini series. So I wanted him to make sure that he was putting his best work out there. So I definitely tip my hat to him. The book looks phenomenal. I'm so happy with it. It's definitely one of those things that you look back at past projects and you say, oh, I could have done that better. I could have done that better. This is one of those books that I feel completely confident that 5 years from now, I'm going to look back, reread it, and I'm still going to just absolutely love it.
When he did these updates to the style, did something about his own process change, like switching from pencils over to digital, or was it just a matter of evolving the characters and evolving his own style?
Definitely. It's just on the character side. I think technology-wise, he's completely digital only. He has a really cool, fast process that he uses. But if you looked at the time, the characters from issue 1 to issue 4 had gone through some evolution, not only in their clothes, but in just little details like their facial expressions or their hair. So the fact that he was able to go back and really bring that cohesiveness together is what's going to give this book a consistent style throughout. And it's really, even the colors, just the color palette that he settled on around the second issue, bringing that back to the first, it just makes it beautiful. Once we package this into a collected edition and people sit down and read it front to back, it's going to look like he drew it all in one sitting.
So do you have plans to do another Kickstarter as a collection, or are you just going to, you know, now that you're with Alterna, let them handle it?
Well, I'm hoping that our issues will sell so well that we'll be able to just fund the graphic novel near the end of the year. If it comes down to us having to fund that, we may go the Kickstarter route, but I'm hoping that just between conventions and online sales, we can really kind of build that up and let it pay for itself. I think that's the sign of a successful comic.
Now, as we said, this is a really fun, comedic, sci-fi type of story, but obviously science fiction is a pretty huge genre in itself. So is there particular appeal to making science fiction and science fiction comedy for you?
I think
because I know like the other work that you do is so incredibly different.
Right. I think this is just appeals to some of the very basic science fiction tropes. We have, you know, we have a government conspiracy. We have space aliens. We have extreme technology. So it was really me taking all the things that I like, the very basics of science fiction, and kind of mashing them together with a bunch of really silly gags. And I think for me that, you know, at the end of the day, I wrote a book that I wanted to read. And so I took all of my loves from both comedy and the science side, science fiction side, and just mashed them together into something that I think is a lot of fun.
Because you have tackled sci-fi before with innovation.
Correct.
And but that was a drama, and Chambers was a crime drama, which each of these projects has an element of in TV land, you know, what they would call like police procedurals. I mean, whether it's FBI or whatever agency. So even though you're dealing with things that are science fiction, you seem to still tap into that police procedural, like the template and the like I said, the buddy cop feel, and you know, there's procedures and protocols and stuff like that. So is this something that you felt like you needed to merge together on your own, or was there just such a rich history that you have probably been influenced your whole life and didn't specifically notice
it? I think I'm just really obsessed with structure. So anytime I can use an organization to help move a story along, I think my brain just tends to go there for whatever reason. But it's interesting as you write and you kind of build a catalog of work over time, you get to see those themes kind of pop out. So I love the fact that you just kind of pointed that out to me, because I'm sitting here going, oh my God, she's right. She's totally right. So I think that when you go into like the police world, you go into the government world, you automatically think, you know, partners. So you start kind of building a cast based off of that, and to have people interact, different personalities interact within a particular structure, I think that's where the magic happens with a procedural or a buddy cop type comedy.
When I watch things like Rizzolian Isles or Bones or Body of Proof, they're things that have heavy science elements to them. And, you know, the real world is still like not even close to where these TV shows are, with things like, it's always like a matter of a couple hours. Like, oh, I'll get you those DNA results in a couple hours. And meanwhile, they really take like months and months. And, there are some cases that don't even get to pretrial for years and stuff like that. So it's funny how there are things that really come off as being realistic, but when it comes to the actual procedure part, they totally just like throw that out. They're like, oh no, we can't possibly say that this team is going to work on this thing for the next 6 months or whatever.
I think we should have an episode of a TV show in one of those that you mentioned, where the whole entire episode is them just the characters in a room just waiting for the test results.
Yeah, because I think that's way more realistic.
and whatever they do to kill time in the middle.
Yeah, there's so much boring parts, of investigating and just whether it's police work or government work or whatever. And it's like, oh, you think you need this permit? Well, I'm sorry, but it's going to take you to
pay. And it's got to go before the city council, and they have to approve it.
And they only meet once a month.
Right, right. Let's do that. I'm going to do my next piece is going to be a city council drama. More comedy.
You know, why not? I mean, Madam Secretary, one of my favorite shows, is like, it's like, how on earth do they actually make this government stuff sound so exciting? I don't know. I worked in small town government and it was horribly boring.
As part of my day job, I work at a newspaper and I cover city council meetings, and they are not exciting.
No, they're not. And yet, talk about things not being instant satisfaction. They will take those meetings to midnight.
Oh, yes.
They have no problem. They have nothing else to do.
Exactly.
I mean, there was one guy who, he was, mind you, over 80 years old. I don't know why he kept insisting on running for council. And he would fall asleep during every single meeting.
That's awesome. That's our government at work, folks.
It was, you know, it was one of those things where it was a joke. I mean, and, you know, we all saw the very honorable Ruth Bader Ginsburg fell asleep during a speech. But really, it's because the stuff gets droning and boring.
And then they start arguing once they all start getting irritated. That's when the fun really happens.
Yeah. And, you know, it's just in those rooms, there's no air movement. It's, you know, there's nothing truly exciting. It's the fiction part that we love so much.
We strip out all of the unfun stuff and just focus on that 5 minute period where stuff actually happens.
Exactly. Did you, I'm like way behind. I'm terrible when it comes to movies, but did you happen to catch things like The Theory of Everything or The Imitation Game?
I've seen neither one of those. I think I'm right with you on the movie stuff.
Okay. Yeah. I'm like way behind. Like I don't, you know, I won't see it till it comes on Netflix. I go to the movies like once or twice
a year.
Yeah,
same here.
So, okay. Cause I was wondering, I was trying to think of other science based scripts that have been out there in the world and getting attention. When it comes to comics, there's always some really good sci-fi stuff, like Letter 44. Yours is called Unit 44. Completely unrelated, nothing at all resembling it, but Letter 44 is a really fun one. And Planet Gigantic.
Oh, absolutely. Planet Gigantic is probably one of the best comic books that I've read this year. I've been trying to push that to everybody that I know. I can't wait to get my copy signed by Eric Grissom, and that's going to be the highlight of my year when I can make that happen.
Yeah, I think you should come up here and do that.
I will. I'm gonna get up there. And then I actually have a really funny Letter 44 story. I was at the New York Comic Con in 2013, and I guess that's the year that the book came out, because I was talking to Jim Zubkovich, who writes Skull Kickers and Wayward Image. And
yeah, he also does like really great advice column type.
Oh, definitely. The guy's amazing. I love his transparency. But I was talking to him. We have a mutual friend, and he was tabling next to Charles Soule, who writes Letter 44. And I hadn't heard of the book.
Charles writes literally 50%
he does.
Of comics on the market.
But at the time, 2 years ago, I didn't really, I knew his name, but I wasn't that familiar with his work. Now, like you said, he writes everything, so I'm really familiar with his work. So his table was beside Jim's, and he wasn't there. I guess he was at a panel or something. And so as I'm waiting to talk to Jim, I see this book just on his table called Letter 44. And at the time, I started writing Unit 44 back in 2012. We started putting it in production in 2013. So I'm like, okay, that name is, you know, it's kind of similar. And, you know, as a creator, you always want to feel like your ideas are completely original. So when you see that somebody has a comic book with a title that's very similar to the one that you're currently working on, it kind of makes you stop for a second. And so I say on the front of it, it was right when the first issue came out, because I remember the cover just has the president on it, the president in the comic book. And so I'm like, okay, well, let me leaf through this while I'm waiting to talk to Jim. And I'm like, there's no way that this book has to do with aliens or anything. And sure enough, there's aliens in it. I was a little bummed out by that, but I've since read the book, and I absolutely adore Letter 44. I think that's seriously one of the best comics being published right now. And happy to say that it's very, very different from what we're doing with Unit 44, but just it was a funny moment there.
Yeah, and really, like, no, for some reason, nobody talks about this book.
I know.
I'm like, I thought that there had to be something wrong with me going, why am I the only person that seems to like this? I don't know if maybe it's just what was it, Oni or Titan?
Yeah,
I forget.
It's Oni. And I think for anybody that's listening that does like that book, if you pretend like that book is hilarious, then that's kind of what you're getting with Unit 44. So I think that you can kind of translate some of that audience there too.
Oh, definitely. And yeah, because they have some real dramatic moments in his writing, certainly. One of the questions I do like to ask to people, though, is, you know, geez, what happens when you run into, or you just feel like the market already has what you want to write? I mean, there's superheroes, there's zombies, there's werewolves. I mean, you know, as a writer, do you ever just go, oh God, I can't possibly touch that subject because, you know, it's already out there and it's already so done.
I think it just depends on where it comes in the process. If, you know, if you're just starting to develop an idea that's kind of similar, the way I think about it is, it takes a comic book anywhere from a year to 2 years to get produced. And in that time, you know, the whatever idea is currently out there, that kind of goes away. You know, things come and go so quickly in the comic book world that what people are talking about this week is not necessarily what they're going to be talking about next week. So I think that if you have kind of a buffer in there, you have a chance to jump back in and rebring eyes to that particular market. But beyond that, it's all about the execution. I mean, even if two people have the exact same idea, there's no way that the final story is going to be the same story. So, I give people the benefit of the doubt. And if I'm passionate about a story, I'm not going to let, you know, in that situation, like I just said, that didn't stop me from continuing on with my book. I was just kind of like, okay, well, that happened and that's funny. And maybe I can use that humor down the line to my advantage.
It's funny that's exactly how you phrased it, because one of the other shows that I listen to is friends of mine do the Making Comics over at Comics Experience, their podcast there. It's a very short format kind of podcast. And Andy Schmidt said the exact same thing.
Exactly.
Because he's been in the business for like 20 years or something. And I'm probably aging Andy a bit. But he started when he was 10.
No. Right, he was born into it. He was hatched in the back offices of Marvel somewhere to edit comics.
Yeah. He sort of had like a reverse career in that he started at like at Marvel and then like went down in through more indies and smaller.
Right, he's actually going, when he dies, he's going to be an intern somewhere.
Yeah, probably.
He's the Benjamin Button of the comics
book Benjamin
world.
Button, yeah. And, you know, that was actually, this whole part of it was the subject of their last podcast, what do you do when there's something similar out there? And he had a short miniseries called 5 Days to Die. And he said that, you know, he didn't know, even though, yeah, he had once worked for Marvel and was friends with those people. It's not like you share specific details about your projects. It's just coincidence when things come out that are similar.
Because I remember this, because Marvel then released a book right around the same time that was something really similar to that, right?
Very similar in title and concept and everything. And he's like, you know, yeah, maybe these folks are former colleagues, at least, or people you talk to a couple times a year. He's like, but you're not sharing the kind of information that would be like, oh, that person stole my story. And I know that that's a concern for some people. I've personally been given that advice by too many people, but I have heard that advice a couple of times that, oh, you know, never share your work. And I'm like, well, you know, because as writers, you and I have to go out and look for artists. So it's like, well, my scripts are out there because I'm trying to court the artists, and in order for me to do that, I have to show them the script, and you know, so it's like, so there's no way for me to not share while I'm completely uncommitted as a creative partnership yet.
Definitely, so. And I think the other side of that that you have to consider is that, you know, I see a lot of people out there that are worried about their ideas getting stolen and making people sign, you know, non-disclosure agreements for independent comics that may or may not even make it to production. But the way I always look at it is, because I hear exactly what you say. You send a script to an artist for consideration, and if they say no, then they still have your script. But, you know, is somebody really going to think how long it takes to make a comic book? It takes months and hours and sometimes years. You know, is somebody really going to take your idea and spend all that time developing someone else's idea, or are they going to do what they're passionate about? So I just think of it that way, and it doesn't concern me as much, I guess. I would hope that the people are creative enough to come up with something original based, or rather than potentially steal a script or a kernel of a story idea from somebody that they were looking to work with.
And when you're not quite established or looking to break in or just learning how to make comics for, you know, for whatever your future holds, you actually do work with other people's properties. It's sort of like fan fiction, if you
right.
will. Like, you know, your assignment might be, you know, who's your favorite character? You know, write 5 pages or, you know, draw 5 pages, whatever it is. And, they, you know, obviously when it comes to television writing, you have to do the same thing. You have to have a feature that's original, which is like, I don't know, 100 pages or something. And you have to have a spec script of something that already exists.
Right.
Like a TV show out there that you, that has to be reasonably popular and well known. If it's something like a half hour sitcom, then you should have 2. And if it's like a full hour drama, then you should have at least 1 good spec script. So you're not going to pick something that, you know, from a TV show that nobody watches. It has to be something huge, like How to Get Away with Murder or Scandal or whatever. And it's, you know, but in a way, it's like fan fiction. So there's like, obviously fan fiction gets such a bad rap, but...
Well, it's a necessity for that particular industry. If you're going to break into TV, then you do what you got to do. But in comics, you know, you're not going to break in by doing, you know, most people aren't going to break in by doing a Batman fan fiction and putting all that work into creating a comic that they can't ever even sell. I think that people are generally intelligent enough to know that they need to develop their own ideas and kind of get something out there that people are going to respond to, rather than saying, oh, this person's doing fan fiction for Spider-Man.
Yeah, you just need to have those sorts of things, obviously, for like your own portfolio.
Exactly.
Every once in a while, something will really take off that is essentially fan fiction, as far as I know. Like Mike Mayhack, I think is how you say his name. He would draw like Batgirl and Supergirl comic strips.
Oh, cool.
But as far as I know, he didn't work for DC. It was just stuff sort of saying in that vein of, these are the things that are really, really lacking mm-hmm. in, you know, in the comics. So I'm going to tackle this, like, you know, whatever the heck ages they're actually supposed to be in the comics these days. I don't know. You would, you know, like subtract 6 years
right.
and be like, you know, this is what they're like in high school. I've seen that before, and there was even like a really popular Batman and Joker story that was being circulated for a while. And again, I think it was just somebody's idea. Like, I have a Batman story I want to tell. I'm going to do this. I'm going to put it on my website, and I'm going to look, you know, use it as work, as not that they're making any money off that, but they're going to use it as a launch point, as a talking point, and be like, look, I did this, I can tell a story.
Definitely. And there's no wrong way to try to get your name out there in the comic book world. And I think for me personally, when it comes down to the man hours involved with putting something from initial idea to finished production, I mean, it's a lot of work. And I'm going to go my own route and try to bring something new to it. But I've definitely seen that work for people. And I know the exact Batman and Joker story that you're talking about. I remember seeing that when it was going around online. It was fantastic. But I don't know that those folks went on to do anything. I'm not really sure where they are career-wise or if that really truly helped them.
Right. And the cool thing, at least one of the things I want to talk to you about is, this is a great segue into, the cool thing about comics is if you say, look, I have a really great Batman story that I want to tell, or a really great Batgirl story that I want to tell, is to make your own character and write that story and tell that story.
Definitely.
Now, what's interesting is yesterday on Twitter, I saw a few creators, it was like 3 or 4 people going back and forth, talking about whether or not you need an agent to get into comics. And I thought, oh, Jesus, God, please no.
Jeez.
And this comes up once in a while because there are some big name creators, usually I don't think artists need agents so much as they need an agent to book them for conventions or to sell their art after it's done. But literary agents are specifically for writers. And there are people who are book authors and comic book creators, guys like Warren Ellis, so Alex Grecian and Chuck Wendig. So they already had agents, and somehow their agents – got them into comics, or the, or, you know, in Ellis's case, it was probably the other way around. He probably had such a huge catalog of comic book work that he was able to get an agent and get his books out there. And I hope it never comes to that, because book publishing is hard.
It is.
To get into. And comic books, like you're saying, is if you have a story to tell, then get out there and tell it. And I don't want to see it becoming an agent necessity type of burden, because, you know, I'm glad that there's things like Kickstarter out there for people like you who want to tell these great stories.
And in comics, there's barely any money as it is. So the thinking about having to pay an agent on top of that, I think I would just sit in my room and cry all the time. That would be horrible. I hope it doesn't go that route.
Yeah, that's exactly what Christopher Jones said. He's like, my page rate is not all that high to begin with. He's like, if I have to now give somebody else a percentage of it, that's really gonna, you know, I'm not gonna get anything.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna keep my fingers crossed, and I have a birthday coming up, so I'm gonna wish that doesn't happen when I blow out the candles.
Do you think though that that it's becoming expected that certain publishers are only looking for people who are already famous somewhere else or successful somewhere else? Fame is whatever your own definition, but
if you're a publisher, your number one goal is to make money, which I completely understand. You know, it's a business, and you're going to go with the names that are going to guarantee you money. I mean, I think we see, over the past couple of years, we've seen, Image Comics, you know, they for a long time were more about, bringing new talent to the table and kind of exposing folks that are doing really interesting and innovative things in the medium and in the industry. And over the past couple of years, they've started to release more from folks who've already written for Marvel for years and years. You know, you've got your Bendises and, I think he's just working with Marvel, but, you know, Brubaker, who just signed that deal to basically put out anything that he'd like to. And yeah, I understand that, because that's guaranteed money for them, and they're going to keep their market share, and they're going to make sure that they're putting out content that people want to purchase. But it definitely makes it hard. So it's like, we almost have to, as indie creators, we have to find, well, what's going to be the next Image Comics that can then get us to Image Comics and eventually Marvel and DC. So it's interesting to see how it's changing. But there's always going to be another publisher that pops up and puts out really quality independent books from creators that maybe we're not that familiar with.
And some of the comic book publishers are crossing over with traditional book publishing anyway. And, you know, because we've seen it happen also with gaming companies, like IDW has the license with Hasbro and stuff. And IDW now has like this huge arrangement with, you know, to have IDW Entertainment Company, where they have a whole process for trying to, you know, get an actual intellectual property that exists or something else that's under their umbrella and move it along to the TV movie route or the video game route. And, you know, then there's, to a smaller extent, things like Action Lab Entertainment has a toy arrangement, and 215 Inc. also publishes books. So, you know, there is a crossover, and sometimes what's interesting is, when there are publishers out there that are publishing the other comic book company's work, like they'll be, you know, the 50 years celebrating Jack Kirby or something like that. And it won't actually come out from Marvel. It'll be printed and distributed by somebody
else.
They'll
do the artist editions and that type of thing, which is great. I don't understand how the business side of that works, but they're definitely, I see what you mean about the crossover. And if you're going to go the traditional route, like there are a lot of book publishers like Scholastic, you know, they'll do the occasional graphic novel. So if you decide that you want to put your book out in that medium, then I can see that you need an agent to facilitate that. But if we had to have agents just to be able to go to, you know, to the indie side or to be able to submit to Marvel, I think that adds additional gatekeepers into the industry that I don't think we need. And I wouldn't want to see added. I think editors really kind of get to play that role at the moment, and the system works, darn it.
Yeah, well, I think the system is improving, actually, because, you know, the old tale that it was just a boys' club and stuff like that. I mean, you always had a handful of women and even non-white creators in comics for American comics. Obviously, it's different elsewhere. But, you know, the like you said, Gatekeeper, we're trying to change that and get more women in the ranks that are decision makers, too.
Absolutely. I mean, just between the influx of films, comic book films over the past couple of years, and even just with the amount of new creators, it is a super exciting, super cool time to be involved in it, and it's going in the right direction. It took forever to get there, but it's going to just keep getting cooler.
So now that you have Unit 44 done and a plan for it, and you know the hopes of it coming out as a trade collection, which I'm guessing would still be handled through Alterna.
Sure.
Do you have other plans for that, or are you working and thinking about other stories like, you know, Chambers, you know, you already had done and things like that? Are you working on brand new things, or are you constantly adding to the things that you've already made?
Well, Ed and I are going to see how Unit 44 does in the marketplace. You know, we hope that it makes $1 million and we can just move to an island somewhere. That's really our game plan.
Yeah, sure.
But if it does well, we've already talked about what we can do, what more we can do with it. We already have stuff written for it. It's there. If people want it, we'll do it. But we've also talked about doing other projects, and even Ed has some ideas that I may help him flesh out from a writing standpoint. So you'll definitely see us work together. I had a really big year last year as far as just writing a lot of stuff. I found that this comedic vein kind of worked for me, and it brought a voice that I was able to really latch onto and enjoy. So I did a lot more work kind of more in that vein. And I've got a few other books that are in production. We're going to have a couple other things hit maybe later this year. And if not this year, then hopefully next year that are on the back burner. They're moving. It's obviously, you work with an artist, it can be a lot of hurry up and wait. But I've got some really, really talented people that I've had the pleasure of working with over the past year, and I'm super excited about some stuff that I have coming up, whether it's late 2015 or early 2016. There's definitely more coming.
Do you have a slush pile of things that you know are just never going to get out there?
Oh, of course. Absolutely. Everybody does. But you keep that stuff and you hope that one day you can maybe look at it with fresh eyes and redo it. Or you hope that maybe you can pull some of the things that you loved about that story and work them into something that you're doing down the line. So nothing ever, the slush pile never dies. It just accumulates. And then you just once in a while dig through the trash and you see what's still ripe and you pull it out and you enjoy it.
When it comes to making plans like this and looking towards the future, or just looking towards each story at a time, how do you set goals to make comics? Are you looking at it as a full story, or are you looking at it as an issue and like that's your goal? Like how do you personally handle it?
I tend to look at each idea. The first step is to figure out what it's going to be. Is it going to be a one shot? Is it going to be a mini series? Is it going to be a graphic novel? And trying to figure out what medium or what method of release is going to work best for you. And once I have that nailed down, it's just a matter of going in, just outlining the story, deciding if it's going to be a mini series, how many issues do I need? And then just diving in and doing the work, which is always the most fun part anyway.
What's the worst thing you ever did to one of your characters? Because like I said, you've got so many different styles. You've got the comedic side, but you have this, you know, drama and police action kind of side too.
The worst thing I ever did to a character, and I won't say which story it was in because it may potentially ruin it for the reader, but I took a character that I loved dearly and I threw them out a window, and I still feel really bad about that.
Did they survive?
That's not on me to decide. The reader really gets to kind of make that call.
Oh, okay. Well, that's pretty cool. Yeah. That's cool. You know, and you know, also like the great opening of The Watchmen.
There you go. You can't go wrong with if someone. I think it was Peter David that said, if somebody doesn't get thrown through a plate glass window in the first five pages of your comic, then you're doing it wrong.
Aw. I don't know, but it's pretty funny. I do enjoy listening to Peter David's advice and reading his blog and stuff. He's wonderful to see at panels.
Yeah, he's amazing. It's funny, when I was growing up and I was reading a lot of comic books, you know, as a kid, you don't necessarily pay attention to the creator side until you get, you know, get a little bit older and get a little bit more interested in it. But one year when I was going through a couple long boxes that I have up at my parents' house, I was quickly discovering that the bulk of comics that I owned were actually written by him. So it's I consider him to be one of my major influences just because I read so much of his stuff growing up.
Yeah, he must have been feeling, I imagine, quite the loss because he worked on the Star Trek franchise so much, and we lost Leonard Nimoy recently this year. So
yeah, it was a rough week.
That was huge, and not only for sci-fi fans.
Yeah, like, I mean, he's in the lexicon. I mean, everybody, he's one of those characters, and we don't have necessarily a lot of them, especially outside of the superhero world, but he was one of those iconic characters that even if you didn't watch Star Trek, and, you know, I will be the first to admit that I wasn't a huge Star Trek fan, but everybody knows who he is. That's awesome. To have a character that's landed that so squarely into the public consciousness is an amazing thing.
Yeah, I think we had, you know, again, some. There are so few that are that huge and iconic. And Harrison Ford, who, you know, walked away from his plane crash, people were devastated because they were wondering, and you're reading all these sensationalized headlines like, he's in critical condition, oh, he's in serious condition, oh, he's been downgraded, and, you know. And yeah, head injuries are very, very serious. I'm not saying that they're not, but I'm saying don't write the man off as dead.
Right. I mean, if the guy could take on Greedo, I'm not worried about a plane.
It got to a point then where, I mean, there was no time wasted in the jokes coming out about the Kessel Run. And it's like, oh, but it's Harrison Ford, and, you know, and whether it was from Star Wars or whether it was from Indiana Jones, it's like, you know, he's just been in so many people's lives that, you know, for our entertainment consumption, that it was a huge, huge deal.
For sure. And working in news like I do for my day job, you know, anytime you get a crash, anytime you get possible death, it's always, that's the headline that for some reason the public wants to read about.
Yeah, absolutely. If it bleeds, it leads.
Exactly.
And that's a shame. Yeah, once in a while, you know, there'll be a sweetheart of a story about firemen saving kittens.
We need more of those.
I will Google that on occasion, just because, you know, sometimes you need
that. Sometimes you need some feel good. And you're not going to get it from, like, TMZ or something like that.
No. Yeah, I mean, maybe the next person in headlines, we'll have to bring Hugo Weaving back.
There we go. Wait, what's he been up to, other than being in every single franchise ever?
Exactly. I mean, I haven't heard his name in a while, I think we need a good dose of that.
Yeah. Hopefully it's not because of a plane crash that we hear about him.
Hopefully not, no. And hopefully that doesn't mean that, you know, things are coming in threes.
Right.
Whatever the curse is. So, you know, thinking about things like the Star Wars universe and Star Trek universe and, you know, The Matrix, if you could go to a fictional place, where would you go?
Oh, that is a good question. If I could live in a fictional world... I'm a Star Wars guy, so my tendency naturally leads there. I'm looking at my DVD collection to try to answer this more appropriately. I think that's where I'd go. If for some reason they did not let me have admission to the Star Wars universe, then I think at this point I'd move on into the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
That's a good one. I mean, as long as you're not living in a city where the buildings are falling down on you.
You know, I watch shows. Like, I'm not a huge TV watcher, but one of the shows that I tried to watch over the past year or so was Gotham. And it's been hit or miss for me. Some of it's been good. Some of it's been a little bit rough. There was a patch near the beginning that I couldn't watch. But every single time I watch that show, I always say the exact same thing. I say, why do people live in Gotham?
Right.
I would just move.
Right. That's, you know, a lot of people have asked that question.
Yeah, it's like everybody's surprised that their best friend got killed. It's like, no, you should get out of there. Go to one of the more friendly cities.
I guess it's like living in Detroit, though. I mean, you know, it's our real world version.
Get out of there. Get out of Detroit.
Get out of there. I mean, you know, like the fact that the government itself is infringing upon people's right to water.
There you go.
I mean, it's very Gotham-esque.
So that's, I would not want to live in Gotham. I can tell you that for sure.
Yeah. And yet, I don't know if you saw that, that Jada Pinkett Smith has not re-signed for season two. So I imagine Fish Mooney is going to come to an untimely demise.
Well, I mean,
no,
so we don't have any more overacting. I think I'll be okay.
But I love that character. I didn't expect to.
It's good. I think they did. They're doing a real good job. It was a rough start from what I've seen, and I haven't by any means seen all of them. You know, they really did make some interesting characters. I'll give them that. I don't know how it works with the timeline of the Batman universe, and I don't think we're supposed to think about that.
I don't think it fits up at all based on, like, people's ages and things like that.
But you know what? And again, I don't watch a lot of TV, and the shows that I do watch are usually in the comic book vein. I growing up, I didn't read a lot of DC comics, so I'm not super familiar with a lot of their characters. But I'll tell you, I don't know if you've seen the Flash TV show. I've enjoyed the heck out of that.
No, I haven't, and a lot of people have recommended it to me. So it's probably one of the things like Arrow that I'll wait for Netflix. Like, I really enjoyed just marathoning Arrow. Mm-hmm. So I will, that's probably my tentative plan. But I, you know, I can't say that I was ever all that attached to The Flash. I did like his appearances in the Justice League cartoons and stuff, but I know that there are really, really big, huge diehard fans.
Yeah. Yeah.
But what's interesting about that is, you know, thinking of things like Iron Man. I mean, and the Fantastic Four. Like, I didn't actually like those characters before the movies came out. Fantastic Four, I gotta say, is not the movies that sold me. I eventually started reading the comics back when Jonathan Hickman was writing them. And so I fell in love with the Fantastic Four, but it was, again, much later in life. I didn't like them as a kid. I thought they were dreadfully boring, and I thought the same thing about Iron Man. I'm like, oh my God, this character sucks. I don't want to see him in my Spider-Man
group. Right.
Get away. So, but then they did, you know, they made a version of him that I loved. And, you know, so when it's something like the Penguin, like, oh my God, you know, I liked the Penguin, but Gotham's version of the Penguin just won my heart from the second he got on there, just because he's so weird and wonderful and darling. And I like the way he's like fake subservient.
Yeah.
Like, he's so subservient, but you know that he's got all of these gears grinding away inside his brain. It's great.
Yeah, that guy's, I think he's going to be the breakout star of that show for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like their Riddler too. Who's the exact opposite of what I would have expected. The Riddler that we've seen before was always so boisterous and over the top and really wanted everybody to know who he was. And these are the preliminary, like you're saying, the timeline is like way early. But I think it's an interesting switch to make the Riddler so introverted and shy, very shy and stuff like that. I think the actor is doing a marvelous job.
Yeah, they definitely have some cool ideas. And I'm glad that the comic book world is spilling over into TV, just because comic books are serialized and they're meant to be consumed on a monthly basis. So to have a weekly comparison to that is really smart. And I think that a lot of these shows have been really solid, and clearly we've got even more coming up. It's gonna be oversaturation over the next couple of years. But, you know, regardless of that, 10-year-old Wes is like super giddy that we're getting all this stuff now.
Well, what I think is interesting about the trend is that there's going to be stuff that's not going to be easily identifiable to other TV watchers as being from comics, like Powers.
Definitely.
Even though, you know, Powers, based on the name, yes, does involve superpowers. But, you know, there are tons of people who watch The Walking Dead that didn't know it was comic.
Definitely. And that's even cooler. I mean, but I think of it as I've watched a lot of movies that I didn't know were books first. So it's just, it's that same thing. And if you're familiar with the source material, then you can kind of appreciate it on a deeper level, and, you know, more power to the folks who are bringing out some of these more indie comics. And like, I know that they're going to do an iZombie show from.
Yeah. I've seen some preliminary photos of that.
Yeah, and that's like from a Mike Allred book, which is insane that, you know, something could come all the way to TV. And I don't know if it's on. I haven't seen it. I don't know much about it. But, you know, if you're not in that world, then of course you're not going to know that that's a comic book. But super cool for the folks who created it that their work was able to translate to that.
Yeah, and like you said, you know, things that come from books, both Bones and Rizzoli and Isles were book properties.
See, I had no idea. That's cool.
And they, you know, I don't know how closely they resemble it. Apparently, the Bones TV show is nothing like them. But I haven't even checked out the Rizzoli and Isles series yet or anything. And True Blood, of course. True Blood was, you know, hugely popular in the book world first.
I think as long as there are people out there doing creative things and they'll keep bringing them in, and it's a good time. It's a good time to be a fan of very creative books or comics, and that's better than rebooting RoboCop for the 8th time.
Yeah, I mean, but that's the problem with any of the franchises. Like, I really don't think we need to see another, Spider-Man origin story.
Right.
I like the origin story, I really do, but you know, I don't think we need a new one every 5 years.
Well,
give it some breathing room.
One of the things I like to tease my wife about is I threaten her that in our lifetime we'll probably see a remake of the Lord of the Rings trilogy, which will be just mind-blowing.
Yeah, I know. I've heard people talk about how that would go. They're like, oh, aren't we about due for this?
Yeah, I mean, it's been over 10 years, I think, since that came out, if you can believe that. So the clock's got to be ticking.
But then there are other wonderful things like Planet of the Apes that go decades, and then, you know, there'll be a really failed attempt, and then another decade later, and there'll be something really great.
Yeah. That's the way it's going to work. I mean, original ideas are hard. It's what we were talking about earlier with publishers. They want to put their time and energy behind creators that are going to bring money to them. So if you have an idea that's, even if it's been done 10 times, if doing another Superman movie is going to make you couple $1 billion, then they're just going to roll with it. And I understand that. It's no big deal.
So besides Gotham and The Flash, and if you're not really watching stuff, what is it that you do for your downtime? Or is there no downtime?
There's right? Rare downtime. I like to read. I like to read comics, obviously. It's I don't have a comic shop near me, so over the past couple of years, I've really gone hard into the world of comiXology. So I am completely,
yeah, so
and 100%
go down that rabbit
I
hole.
Love it. I'm completely and 100% behind it. I was one of those people that was not feeling it at first, but just to see that from my couch I can get probably a better selection than what I would get at the comic shop. And you know, I encourage people to, if you are able to go to a shop, you should do that. You should support them 100%. I had a great comic shop when I lived in a major city, and I miss them dearly, but just the fact that I can get anything within about 30 seconds, it's fantastic. And I am not afraid to throw down a couple dollars to try something new. Once in a while, I go onto Twitter and I say, hey, I was doing this the other night. I was like, I've got $5 to spend. What should I read? And I had a bunch of people toss me ideas, and I read some really cool books that I'd never heard of before.
Well, what's cool is sort of like the digital version of the big, huge white box sales,
yeah.
are the bundles. Oh. And there's Humble Bundle, where you sort of like name your own price. And then there's comiXology bundles. And you can get a ton of like number one issues or something. Or they'll do it in a theme, like a Transformers bundle or things like that. So, you know, and you're Unit 44, maybe one of these days will end up in one of those bundles. But it's really cool because, you know, just the fact that whether I'm at my comic shop and looking for things in the sale bin, or if I'm reading digitally, I still need a bargain.
Absolutely.
I mean, if it means spending, like doing less shopping per year, obviously, but if I have like the $20, I'd rather meet an artist or a writer at a show and just give them the $20,
right,
and, you know, get the book signed and enjoy that experience.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But if that's, you know, that's not something that's going to happen week to week. Like, you know, with me, I have been waiting and waiting and waiting for a couple Marvel titles to go on sale. So it wasn't until now that I just read like the first volume of Captain Marvel.
That's awesome. I just had that same experience with Hawkeye. You know, that was a book that I'd heard
right,
great things about, and I finally was able to afford it. So I enjoyed the heck out of that.
Yeah, and it was, you know, still one of those decisions where Comixology was having a 50% off Marvel sale.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh my God, Marvel at 50%?
Heck yeah.
Really?
And I'm a writer by day and a writer by hobby, so I don't have all the money in the world. So if I'm going to take my weekly budget and spend it on comics, I'm going to try to get the biggest bang for my buck. So unfortunately, that means I'm not current on a lot of series. I typically will wait until, you know, it goes down in price a little bit, but that lets me read more comics as opposed to just being able to buy $2-4 books a week. You know, you gotta make it count.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I'm kind of late to the party with Wicked and Divine,
mm-hmm.
but you know, that's a fantastic series. Kieran Gillen and Jamie McKelvey. You know, again, it's like, I'll see the buzz about, like, Lumberjanes was another one. I had to, like, I waited, like, everybody was talking about Lumberjanes, and I was like, oh, yeah, I'll get to it someday.
I'll read it in 2 or 3 months.
And eventually I did, and I was like, oh my God, this is the greatest thing ever.
Yeah. And it's cool because, you know, if people are talking about stuff, that gets me excited to read it. I have a list of things that I like to read regularly, but I love getting a number one that just blows my mind. Like, that experience to me is still just as cool as it was when I was a kid.
So besides Planet Gigantic, what one has had that effect on you recently?
I'll tell you some of my favorite comics right now that I really like. The Woods, coming out from Boom Studios. That's a great title. I talk about it like it's kind of similar to Morning Glories, if you're familiar with that series from Image.
I haven't read it. I'm vaguely familiar with it.
And Morning Glories is equally as great. So The Woods is like a Morning Glories where stuff actually happens. And that's just a silly joke. I really don't mean that. I like everybody that's making Morning Glories too.
Well, yeah, I've met some people that do make it. They're really great
they
people.
Are. It's a great book. And I really like The Manhattan Projects.
Oh, you know, that's one I've never checked
that
out.
That book is insane. And I think that I do a lot with science and sci-fi, and they do as well. So that book speaks to me on just that nerdy type of level. So definitely, yeah, you should definitely check that out. That book it's crazy. I mean, you will finish issues and you will have no idea what happened, but it's still awesome. And Nick Patara is on art and it's written by Jonathan Hickman. And I'll read anything that Jonathan Hickman writes. That guy is crazy good.
Brilliant. He's one of one of those people where you want one of those lock and key keys to go into his brain and go, how did you come up with this?
I would love to see, because he always has this gigantic plan on all of his Marvel stuff and all of his indie stuff. I would love to just like raid his hard drive and look at the types of files that he keeps. I think that would be cool from a process standpoint. Another good book that I really enjoy is Bravest Warriors from Boom. Which is based off the web cartoon
I knew there was some kind of connection from somewhere, and I didn't know what it was. I was like, is this a cartoon network? Like, what is, like, I didn't know what it even was.
It is, and if you haven't seen the cartoon, go check it out on YouTube. Each episode's like 5 minutes long, and they're absolutely hilarious. And they do a great job at translating those characters to the printed page. So that's definitely something I recommend to people any chance that I get. A lot of people just aren't familiar with kind of what it is, so definitely check that out. And there's just so much good stuff out there right now. I'm trying to think of what else that I've read. That's Hawkeye was really good. I know I'm really late to the party on that, but I really thought that was good. I even read the first trade of The Strange Talent of Luther Strode recently,
that's Justin Jordan.
It sure
right?
is. And that's a book that I'd heard about for years and I'd always meant to read it. And I finally said, you know what, I'm gonna take the chance, I'm gonna dive in, and I love the heck out of that. That it's got art by Trad Moore, and it is just like this hyper kinetic, completely amazing visual. It's hyper violent, which will probably turn some people off, but really just really good book, really funny, really, really silly, but very poignant at the same time.
He's amazing with action, action scenes.
Heck yeah.
I read Dead Body Road, I think that was his.
Oh, Justin Jordan?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember reading, I think I read the first issue of that, but I think I fell off.
You know what I think you will like, and I don't know if this is on your radar. Have you checked out Copperhead?
Yes. Oh my gosh, I was going to say that next. I just read the first issue of that last week, and I'm not a big Western guy. They don't tend to speak to me, but again, you put that sci-fi in there and I'm sold.
And it's still got a little bit noir too, so it's like not even hardcore Western. Definitely. Like, you know, like Firefly, it's sort of like this incredible fusion of things.
I read the first issue and I have the second issue waiting for me, but I'm super excited to dive into that world. I think that's going to be really cool.
Awesome. My other sci-fi favorite has been Black Science, even though I'm a couple issues behind.
That is also good as well. I've only read the first issue of that, and that's one of those things where I said, I'm going to wait on this. I'm gonna let them sock away a couple trades before I really dive into that world. But I thought that was a great opening, and Rick Remender is just great. He does some fantastic work.
The art, Matteo Sclera,
awesome.
Stunning. I think Dean White did the colors. Unbelievably stunning art. And so just, it looks like they have fun when they make it. And when you feel that from reading a story, it's a strange thing that comes through. Like when I read, Unit 44, I feel like you guys are having fun.
Absolutely.
And with Black Science, I got that same feeling because there's all these cool aliens and creatures and, you know, all of the characters have very specific traits. So it seems like something they just, to put that much love into it, they have to really be completely into it.
And the other book, the last book I'll shout out to, because I think that if people like this, they would also really like Unit 44. If anybody is reading God Hates Astronauts from Image Comics, which is Ryan Brown, are you familiar with it?
I only am familiar with him in that I think he appears at every convention.
I think he does too. It started as a webcomic, and you can actually read the first volume for free on that website. But they moved it to an ongoing series of Image, and it is just this really bizarre, imaginative space series that I can't even tell you what's going on because I don't even know. But it's funny. It's got a ton of visual humor. It's got a ton of great gags. But if anybody listening to this that is into that series, I definitely think that they would find Unit 44 amusing as well.
Cool. Yeah, and the other things that I've been reading are all ages or specifically kid-targeted books. That's the brain candy that I like.
Sure.
You know, I love, like I said, Planet Gigantic, and which is more of an all ages. It doesn't mean that it's targeted to kids.
Oh, no. I mean, I think that anybody can get behind that. That's...
Yeah.
It's got two kids as the protagonist, but the story is very mature. They did a fantastic job with that book.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And Hero Cats and Penny Dora and the Wishing Box is another good one. And Oddly Normal, which I think Oddly Normal is also, I want to say that's an Image book.
Okay. I'm not familiar with the other ones on the list, but I'm going to have you to email me those names so I can look them up.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll have to get you. Penny Dora and the Wishing Box is definitely an Image. The other one is Oddly Normals by Otis Frampton, but I might be getting the publisher confused. Yeah, so just like good, very fun, good stories that, you know, it's okay if you leave it out on your coffee table.
I like fun. I think that's one of the things that we set out to do with Unit 44 is, and we were talking about this before we started recording, but right now in comics, we're starting to move out of it, but for a couple of years there, we were really stuck in this realistic, this gritty, everything was very downer, everything was very dark, and Ed and I really set out to make a book that was light, that was funny, that was silly, that was completely irreverent. You're not going to learn any deep life lessons from Unit 44, but you are going to have, you know, 15 minutes of just absolute fun. And you're going to laugh out loud when you read it. So I think that anybody that kind of is looking for that escape that some comic books offer, they need to check that out. It's really going to be exactly what they want.
That's awesome. And I think that it's cool when you can easily tell people, oh, if you like this, then you'll like this. I mean, I just think that's an easy way to sell your product.
For sure.
Let's see, what else did I read recently? Oh, Part-Time Princesses by Monica Gallagher.
Okay.
She's a writer that an artist that I found her book. I'm trying to remember if it was through Twitter or if I met her at the convention first. But she has a book called Boobage.
Okay.
It's really it's awkwardly specific, but it is about how going through adolescence and women developing feelings about their own bodies and stuff. And so when I saw that she had this kind of silly comic out called Part-Time Princesses, I thought it was going to be a princess story, but it's not. It's actually like the mean popular girls that are seniors in high school.
Huh.
And they're part-time princesses at a local amusement park.
Okay. That's the catch. That's hilarious.
That's the catch, but it's a fast read. It's a fun read, and it's, you know, it's the sort of thing where it's not like an in-your-face morality tale, but it's there.
That's great. I'm really glad that stuff like that is coming to the forefront now. I really think we need more of that.
Cool. All right, Wes. Well, I mean, it's been always wonderful, super wonderful talking with you. And this is why we do it a couple times
Absolutely.
A year. We're just going to make it a regular.
I don't even remember if we were promoting a book. I just enjoy chatting with you.
Yeah, it's so much fun. And, you know, I wish you the best of luck with all the projects. But, you know, Unit 44, I think a lot of people need to get their eyes on for sure this year.
Absolutely. And one of the best ways to do that is from April 10th through 12th, I'll actually be at MegaCon in Orlando, Florida. So if anybody is in the area, I'll be at in the independent press area, so they can stop by, and if they want to get their hands on a physical copy, I'll be more than happy to help hook them up.
Okay, that's really good to know. And like we said, you know, March 25th, very soon, the digital readers will be able to get their eyes on it too.
It'll be here. Well, it's been a couple of years, but we're finally arrived, and I'm super excited.
Well, you know, it's a slow process, like you said.
It is, and this is always the most terrifying part, because you've been coddling the project, you've been showing the project tender love, and now you have to send the kids off to school, and it gets all scary from there.
Aw, yeah. Your babies are out there.
They are, and they're not coming back. But they better pay their own college tuition, darn it.
All right, so is that the only con yet that you have scheduled?
That's the only one officially on the books. We have one in nearby Panama City in August that I'll be at, and then I'm planning to make it back for New York Comic Con this year. Probably won't table, probably just be walking around, but I'm bound and determined to get back there.
Okay, cool. Hopefully I will see you.
I would hope so.
All right, and where are the links so that people can actually, you know, make sure that they follow you and they don't forget any of these announcements?
Fair enough. They can follow me on Twitter at Wes Loker, all one word. They can find me at Facebook at Writer Wes Loker. And for more information on Unit 44, they can visit alternacomics.com or unit44.com, and there'll be links to that first issue on March 25th.
That's wonderful. Cool. All right, Wes. It's always great talking to you. And I, of course, will be chatting with you on Twitter.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me. I really do appreciate it.
Anytime. You guys can follow me on Twitter, if you're not already, at Elizabeth Amber. And everything else is at amberunmasked.com. Don't forget that you can sponsor the show on the website. Make sure that I can do things like pay for web hosting. Go to patreon.com/amberunmasked. So if you don't have free comic book day plans, remember that's coming up very soon for people. So stick around on my Twitter and at Comic Fusion's Twitter to see what news and announcements we have regarding that.